by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you say it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make the heaven the middle of it. Grass make the heaven the middle. We are grass make the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a fine program this evening for you. We're going to start off with an interview that Harrison Smith had with Ivory Hecker. Ivory Hecker was recently fired from a Fox affiliate in Houston, and she has quite a story to tell. But here we go with Harrison Smith and Ivory Hecker.
All right, folks, welcome back. Third hour of American Journal, and I'm joined in studio by Ivory Hecker. You know who she is. She was the Project Veritas whistleblower that blew the whistle on her local news station, Fox 26 in Houston, about how they limited her ability to report on things that the people actually wanted to hear about. Thanks so much for coming in, Ivory.
Thanks for having me.
So we interviewed you on this show. It was right after you'd come out with Project Veritas, and you were probably still in the maelstrom of the fallout and the request for, you know, interviews and all that sort of stuff. Have things calmed down for you a little bit since then, or are you still going, you know, full force?
Yeah, they have calmed down. The support's been amazing, and I still get interview requests almost every day, but I'm at this point where I'm like, okay, let me shift gears back to some journalism here.
Right.
I've been like really antsy to get covering some stories again, and sources are now just coming to me like never before with stories, so I need to start covering some of them.
That's awesome. So what obviously, you just launched your new website, ivoryhecker.com. Can you tell us about that and what, you know, people can expect when they go there?
Yeah, I'm going to be uploading my original reports on video there. You know, I was a TV reporter full-time for 9 years, so I know how to put together a TV news report, and I'm going to be uploading those videos to my new website. So I just launched this thing yesterday, so there's just a couple of videos up there right now, but there's going to be a whole lot more content coming up. I am hitting the road for an important news report, couple of reports I'm going to be covering on the ground starting on Monday. So if you go to that website, once you subscribe, you're going to get access to all my content. And these are the stories that Fox and the mainstream media have been very aggressively ignoring.
Right.
And these are the sorts of stories that you can't even upload to social media because they'll get deleted by social media. So they'll be safe on my website.
That's great. Yeah, you need to make your own outlet because, yeah, they're not going to be safe on Twitter or YouTube or anywhere else. But I have noticed that, you know, I was looking on your Twitter, and these are also the stories that save lives sometimes, right? I mean, you've had stories of people who didn't know about medicine until, you know, you revealed it to them, and they say, you know, it helped to recover from COVID. I mean, what are some of those stories that you've covered?
Yeah, actually, the very first story that I wanted to cover right away when I left Fox was COVID drug treatment.
Right.
That was a topic that Fox banned me from covering after they learned that I couldn't keep up with the narrative. I was supposed to understand what the narrative is and just stick with it. But it's an unspoken narrative in the mainstream media, so reporters are just supposed to get what you're not supposed to talk about.
Right.
And I do get what you're not supposed to talk about, and I refuse to ignore it.
Right.
So that was my issue, is that I allowed certain drugs like hydroxychloroquine to be talked about in my interviews.
In not a negative way, right? Not demonizing it and saying, here's this conspiracy theory about hydroxychloroquine, but actually saying, here's what doctors are saying about it. Here's how it's actually helping people.
Yeah, and earlier in 2020, a lot of people talked about it did get mainstream coverage, but the mainstream narrative shifted at one point where they're like, okay, we're no longer going to discuss this topic. But the facts on the ground were that doctors across Houston were still prescribing it right. to their patients. And the doctor I interviewed last August said he was having great success, which when I went back and verified the numbers, his hospital has a lot lower death rate than COVID compared to other hospitals. So there's something there. But anyway, that's what originally got me banned from covering COVID drug treatment, not just hydroxychloroquine, but all drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I left Fox, I felt such a duty to cover that topic because when I actually looked back into it, this is a topic that I had no interest in prior.
Right.
But once I had been banned from it in such a strange way, I became more curious about it. And I realized that there was research that was evolving over the months of 2020 that showed a lot of promise with certain drugs like ivermectin.
Mm-hmm.
Ivermectin peer-reviewed research shows that it's really doing wonderful things for patients. And so I felt a duty to cover that topic because it was something that the mainstream media was ignoring. I wasn't just banned from covering ivermectin. Nobody at my TV outlet was covering ivermectin. And Fox Corp, which owns Fox 26 Houston, owns all the major city Fox stations, you know, Fox Dallas,
mm-hmm.
Fox Phoenix, they were not only ignoring this topic, but they were pumping out ads disguised as social media posts
right.
promoting the vaccine and just pushing the vaccine like crazy on their audiences on air as well. So anyway, when I covered ivermectin, I covered this topic in my independent news report, and I just the past week heard back from a couple in Arizona who came across my independent report. They hadn't seen anything about ivermectin in the media. I guess my report was their first awareness of this drug. And about a week or two later, their whole family got sick with COVID. And they went to the ER. Nothing, the doctor wouldn't do anything. The wife tells me that the ER doctors basically just sent her husband home with no treatment, just saying good luck.
Right.
And her husband was extremely sick. The rest of the family did okay, but her husband had a bad case of COVID. So she recalled my report, found a doctor who would prescribe ivermectin, and she says it saved her husband's life.
Right.
And for that, I just said, whatever happens after this, I'm good.
Right.
If my coverage somehow helped a family like that, that's incredible.
Right. If you can just save one life, then everything else is worth it. And that sort of goes to why it's such a big deal that Fox would censor you from talking about this in the first place and how this is happening all across the country. Who knows how many lives could have been saved if actual cures had been allowed to be talked about. And I think there was actually a story yesterday, should have brought in today. Israel has been doing tests, and the headline yesterday was like ivermectin, incredibly effective, $1 a day for a treatment, and it, you know, lowers death rates by this amount. So finally now, I guess a year and a half after the breakout, they're actually coming out with the information that yes, it does actually help cure COVID, but we should have been talking about this a year and a half ago.
Absolutely. And a year and a half ago, nobody quite knew what to do. Everyone was kind of exploring their options. But if you really think about the news coverage, how many outlets were really dedicating much time to treatment methods? If you so concerned about this deadly new virus, wouldn't you want to be looking in detail and raising awareness about what doctors are discovering to work and not work at the hospital bed? But for some reason, they didn't want to delve into those topics.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, there are people who are like, oh my gosh, ivermectin. No, no, no. That's for heartworms for your dog.
Right. And they're like, oh, you want to drink bleach too? I mean, it's crazy how they've.
And it people don't realize ivermectin has been FDA approved for humans since 1987.
Right.
It's been widely used in Africa for decades for parasites. But as research has evolved, it's found to be a very effective antiviral as well.
Right.
And American media doesn't want to shed light on that. Yeah. If you Google ivermectin, like the first thing is like this you know, alarming warning from the FDA not to touch it.
Right. No, it's incredibly bizarre. No talk about prevention, no talk about vitamins or, you know, keeping your body healthy, no talk about cures or, you know, any attempt to treat the sickness. It was vaccines since day one. Masks were the only preventative measure that they cared about. And now we see where we are. And I want to talk about how that narrative is enforced without sort of overt top-down control. I think that's the most interesting part about your story. We'll be right back. We're still getting new fans. I mean, to me, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but, you know, to me, it's like if you aren't already on this team, like, I don't understand how we pull you over here now. But we're always getting callers to say, I just woke up a month ago. You know, I just found out about Alex Jones 3 months ago, and it's really amazing and inspiring. It makes me feel like, you know, we really can make a difference and bring in more people. It's really great. So what's been your experience? Did you know about Alex Jones before all of this happened? I mean, were you sort of just like in the mainstream media world and is now you've broken out of it? I mean, just what is that experience like? It's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I just found out about Alex Jones in the past year. And now I realize he has a massive cult following, and I'm not sure why I never heard of him prior to that. But I, to a certain extent, I was locked in to the mainstream media narrative. And honestly, so much of my time went into my news beats that I would cover that I wouldn't venture into other territory. But I am surprised that I never heard of Alex Jones until sometime in mid-2020. It was my boyfriend at the time who introduced me to him.
Good man.
But yeah.
Darn it. Well, you let a good one get away, unfortunately. That's a good man. No, it is fascinating to me that people don't know who Alex Jones. I mean, I guess that means, you know, clamping down on him and clamping down on InfoWars has been fairly successful. But since leaving I've never worked at a mainstream news site, so I don't know what it's like. All I know is InfoWars, and I know that InfoWars is not like the mainstream news. I don't know how they are, but I know they're not like how we are. So what's been your experience going from sort of a, I don't know, well-regulated, controlled, professional sort of setting to just being on your own, independent, out there, you know, freewheeling? What's that transition been like?
It's been really wonderful. You're extremely regulated working for the corporate news. Actually, any sort of public appearance or, you know, getting interviewed by someone else, it has to be approved by Fox Corp in New York.
Right.
So I have to ask my Houston boss, and she has to run it up to New York, and they're like, okay, that'll be all right. This one time I was interviewed by the Houston paper, and I was getting a call from our Fox Corp PR team in New York telling me what to wear for the interview with the newspaper. And it was just, so they really regulate you, and they turn down most interviews. And then when you do get to go speak publicly somewhere, it's just nagging in the back of your mind what you can and can't say.
Right.
And so interviews were hard, and I would like stumble over my words. And now just being my own person, being free, I've been shocked at my ability to just speak off the cuff. I'm like, oh, I can do this.
Right. You don't have this like invisible sensor that's been implanted in the back of your head that's watching. See, that's fascinating. And that's why I said before we went to break was I wanted to talk about, you know, what the enforcement mechanism is for controlling the narrative, because people, you know, you say, oh, it's all controlled, you know, there's a conspiracy of some sort, and people go, that's not how it happens, you know, nobody's telling these people what to say. But in reality, it's more subtle, right? It is like you say, they don't necessarily tell you what to say, But when you step out of line, they'll make you aware. So then suddenly you're policing yourself. I mean, just what is that enforcement mechanism? How do they maintain the narrative without explicitly, you know, dictating what you do and do? Or maybe they just explicitly, you know, dictate what you're allowed to talk about.
They don't really dictate that. I mean, they just give this advice to not share your opinions on topics that are too controversial.
Right.
You know, like who did you vote for or what's your stance on abortion? Don't talk about stuff like that. That's the most direct advice that I received. But other than that, you're just supposed to sense what the narrative is. And the narrative is a left-leaning slant in every newsroom across America.
Mm.
And so from my experience, news people all just kind of, it's kind of their unspoken thing that sometimes comes up and is spoken, that if you present yourself as a leftist, you'll be safest and you'll grow in the industry. And so it creates this culture of ignoring the right-wing section of our audience, not even pitching their stories, not answering their questions, and coddling leftist politicians and building good relationships with those people and covering their stories.
So it's kind of like even if you have conservative beliefs, like that's fine. You can have your personal beliefs. But when you present yourself, you're going to want to present yourself sort of this way, which is more liberal, more left-leaning. You're going to want to soften up that a little bit. So it's like you can believe whatever you want, but when you present yourself, you want to present. And so really what that's creating is the illusion that everybody agrees with each other, even if they don't, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's so strange how this culture has developed and just perpetuated itself over the years. But, you know, I've had coworkers confide in me that they are actually, you know, these journalists that are, they're actually right-leaning in their personal politics. They're great journalists who don't let their personal politics get in the way of the facts. So no matter which way you lean in your personal politics, the truth should be first.
Mm.
And, you know, one coworker, that's how it was. This person was right-leaning politically, but would just pursue the truth regardless. But told me with glee that they had our boss convinced that they were a big Biden voter.
Mm.
So that it was like, you know, they feel like they're going to get promoted and do well in the company if the boss believes that they loved Biden. This person had sat in my boss's office and got her to warm up to them so much that she was gushing before the election about how badly she wanted Biden to win.
Oh my God. See, that's just so bizarre. Like, I could never imagine like pretending to be a Biden supporter. I don't know. I used to work on, you know, film sets and TV shows and stuff, and like everybody was leftist. Everybody was very open about it. And I knew that I could probably do better and make them happy if I pretended to agree with them. But like, I just couldn't do it because it's just like, I don't know. My heart rebels at the idea that I would lie like that. But I guess that's what you have to do to succeed in this corrupt world.
Well, I refused to be a part of that. I am a classically trained journalist. I know what journalism school teaches you, and it does not teach you to do that. It doesn't teach you, okay, to be a good journalist, you ignore right-wing values. You know, that's not one of the elements of journalism. And so to me, it was like, I'm going to hold my boss's feet to the fire and see if they will follow through with the journalism that they were trained with.
Right.
So I'm going to pitch these stories and dare my boss to cover them like a real journalist.
Of course, they refuse to. Very interesting stuff. Your phone calls on the other side. Don't go anywhere, folks. And we had you said something so interesting during this last break, because we were talking about the way politics influences the way things are covered. And you said, since when is life-saving medicine a political issue? And I think that's such a good question. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, the vaccine. This is not a political issue. This is a life and death issue. This is a health issue. It's a personal choice issue, but it's not a political issue. And yet by making it political, they're able to justify not talking about it or avoiding talking about it or whatever they want to do. Can you expand on that a little bit about how, you know, what it was like for you to bring up a topic about a life-saving medicine just to have them claim it was political to shoot it down?
Yeah, this is a debate I had with my boss, Lee Meyer, in Houston during our annual review in May, shortly before I called out Fox Live on air and got out of there. They had my annual review, and I said, I do want to review this past year with you because right. There has been a narrative spin like never before.
Stop. Was this like never before? I mean, before COVID-19, you hadn't experienced anything that made you question things? It was really just the last year that you went, whoa, something's off here.
Yeah, I was personally given unjournalistic directives on a level like never before, and that probably has to do with the fact that the national story became the local story.
Right.
I think that there is there's always a big national narrative, probably.
Mm.
But with local news, it's less. The narrative is slightly less controlled.
Right, right.
Although we are still taking down these national packages every day, but suddenly the story every day was the national story. I was getting assigned to COVID almost every day.
Right.
And the bosses wanted me to follow a certain narrative, regardless of whether the facts contradicted that narrative.
Right.
And so I started to call out my boss's unjournalistic directives. And anyway,
yeah, so you go in for your year review and you're like, all right, things have been a little different over the last year and you wanted to talk about it. What was their reaction?
Yeah, and my boss said, let's not get into politics here. I'm not going to debate politics with you. And I said, politics?
Right.
The entire debate was about medicine. We were literally debating what to put in people's body.
Right.
Whether we should shove down people's throats that they need to take this jab, you know, or whether we should just objectively cover the jab without forcing it down people's arms.
Right.
You know, and my boss is saying that I'm not going to get into politics. How is that politics? I'm talking journalism.
Right.
You know, journalism is covering everything objectively, taking a step back, taking a breath, not getting emotional about your personal desire to jab everyone, and just saying, look, I'm going to answer my viewers' questions. What are my viewers' questions? Because in the comment section on Fox's social media,
right,
they are having a laughing fit at us.
Right.
They do not take us seriously because we are not being journalists. We're propagandists. They see through it. They've turned off their TVs, but they still follow us on Instagram where they like to sit and giggle at our propaganda posts. And if you don't see that, boss, you need a reality check. And I did call her a propagandist in our annual review. She was highly offended. And she was like, Ivory, it's not our fault that the only, you know, that every medical expert that we have, you know, says that young childbearing women should be getting the jab and that
insane,
you know,
insane. Meanwhile, you're like, well, what about all these medical experts that say otherwise? They're like, do not interview them. Do not talk to them.
I was like, there's a lot of medical experts with, you know, looking at other research on spike proteins on the placenta and these other concerns and the unknowns. In fact, the FDA website blatantly says that There's certain things we literally don't know
right. About
what's going to happen with a breastfeeding woman who gets the vaccine, for instance. And why does the FDA website tell people to stop getting pregnancy tests around the time that they are getting the jab? What is that? Why is that? You know, but
why is that? Why would they say that?
You know, I wouldn't. You know, I don't know if it has to do with the fact that you're going to, you know, have a pregnancy test positive, get the jab, and then have a pregnancy test negative.
Oh, it could be something like that.
So, I was just like, I was reading through the FDA's advisories on this, and I was like, that one is super weird.
Right.
You know, but we shouldn't ask questions about that. We should just have our small list of approved medical experts
right. Who
say CDC talking points and not question anything, because curiosity in 2021 is apparently not an element of journalism anymore.
That's very dangerous.
And so anyway, we got into this debate about that and about actual treatments like ivermectin. And she was like, I'm not going to be political, Ivory. I'm not going to have a political debate. I was like, this is not politics. This is about covering, you know, doing journalism.
Right.
And when you're shoving your propaganda down people's throat, I mean, like days before that, the bosses had called an entire newsroom meeting to talk about how can we get the numbers, the vaccine numbers to go up, because the vaccine meter was just not ticking up. And my boss is literally saying, how can we get to our black community? How can we get to the children, you know,
right,
to get them vaccinated? Maybe if we tell people that they're not going to be able to go back to work if they don't get the jab, maybe that'll convince them. That's propaganda rather than just saying, you know, viewers, you and your concerns are our priority, not whether or not you get the jab, but whether it is the best in your best interest. What are all the pros and cons? We're going to objectively look at every pro and con. You know, instead of taking calling a meeting about that, what are the biggest concerns our viewers have and how can we seek answers to that? Instead of having that meeting, they were having a meeting saying, what sort of crazy headlines can we create to push more people to get jabbed?
Right.
Because they must get jabbed. And that is propaganda. That is not answering the viewers' questions.
That's quite a story she has to tell. Next coming up is Erica Kahn being interviewed by Jeff Rentz. And she talks about how dangerous, even for children, that these vaccines and all this being exposed to the side effects can be. But here we go next with that.
And it was interesting today, somebody posted in one of the social media groups, this is what they said. My husband's been a mortician since 1994. We can see the increase in deaths in real time. There was not an abnormal increase in deaths in 2020. Elderly deaths increased three times the normal rate after the CV jab rolled out. He never saw anything like it in his 27 years of working.
Wow. So the vax killed triple the number of elderly patients that this particular mortician saw. And that was a first. Never seen anything like it.
And
you can't lay that off to anything else. It's the vax.
Yeah, it's just blatantly obvious.
Oh, all right, let's go listen to Dr. Artis a little bit more here, see if there's anything else we can add.
Yes, there is a huge amount of underreporting for sure. I would suspect for sure, based on this whistleblower coming out, that Thomas Renz has filed this on behalf of the American Frontline Doctors, that when it's a factor of 5, you have to estimate it's at least a 10. But for sure, the actual numbers are 45,000 just within 3 days of getting the shots.
And that's not.
Oh, and?
May I speak in German?
Most disturbing.
I just spoke about the incentives for doctors to tell something or not to tell it. And it depends on what they charge for it. And it depends whether they feel they have made a mistake, and then they wouldn't say it. So if they give a vaccination, they would not like to tell it so much to anybody if something happens. So there are such problems which distort the whole statistics, and we have to have this in mind. And I'm very sure that we have much more side effects with the so-called vaccination than we have in the numbers and in the statistics of all administrations.
But Wolfgang, in Germany, it wouldn't be just the doctor who does the vaccination who would need to report this. But I mean, if a doctor has a patient that, you know, just what we heard earlier from the dentist. So if someone comes to the doctor and say, well, I had a vaccination, I have a rash, or like I have a headache, yes, or something. And then the new doctor, or like his regular doctor, if the vaccination was done, for instance, in one of these vaccination centers, then he would say, I have to have, you know, did this vaccination and now I feel sick 7 days later, I can't move my leg anymore or something like that.
Yes.
Then this doctor would also need to report, in fact.
Yes, that's right. He is obliged to report, but
If they don't know about the reporting system, they can't report.
Yes, the reporting system is sometimes a little bit complicated, and it makes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And the next patient is waiting.
Yeah.
Jetzt aber, da wir ja einen Gast haben, wollten wir möglichst keine Selbstgespräche führen. Brian, I'm sorry about the interruption. You were going to say something when we interrupted you.
Yes, I am, and I want everybody in the world to listen to this. On the FDA slide 16 in October 2020, there's a side effect listed on there. It is called multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children. It's abbreviated MIS-C. This is a brand new disease that's only been ever created and given a diagnostic code since 2020. Now, we all know that COVID was very little threat to, or SARS-CoV-2 was very little threat to children, also to pregnant women, we already knew. But there were very rare occurrences where the spike proteins of the coronavirus could create this multi-inflammatory syndrome in children. Now, it's a known side effect of the vaccine. The FDA knew it. By definition, if you look up the Mayo Clinic's definition of what multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children is, it is a severe inflammation of multiple organs in the body, including the brain, the kidneys, the spleen, the gastrointestinal tract, the eyes, the skin. This is all a part of that. If you look up complications on their definition of this actual syndrome, it can be deadly. Now, in VAERS, I have not seen a single one of these reported into VAERS, but if you go to cdc.gov, there's already reported since the shots have started. There's already been over 4,200 reported to the CDC occurrences of multi-system inflammatory syndrome in children, and already over 40 deaths of children reported to the CDC. And this is what you want to push on all the masses of children in America and across the world to allow them to go to school. I find this just atrocious and disgusting. And everyone needs to know this is a known side effect because the mRNA, the spike proteins in the shots, and anything else that might be in those shots are going to cause this debilitating, horrible reaction of inflammation in multiple organs at one time in the body of children.
See what he said? And anything else that might be in those shots.
Yep.
This guy is right on it. So are we. So are many others. And we don't know. We're trying to project on the basis of adverse reactions, what they are, what kind they are, how frequent they seem to come upon the vaxxed or the innocent bystanders, and they are beginning to show some of the very same symptoms that the vaxxed have.
Well, I tell you, this virus and these vaccines and stuff, they can be very dangerous. So, you know, and what they're doing is they're not using in the main hospitals even today hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin to cure some of these people. And it's like fortresses. They turn the hospitals into fortresses. I have good friends that I've had some recent experiences with, and they just couldn't affect some of these alternative treatments whatsoever. But anyway, we've got Alex up next, Alex Jones. He talks about these babies and these baby parts and so forth. And he brings back a story that he broke years ago. But this is quite insightful about what's going on in this harvesting and this trading of body parts all over the world. So here we go next with that.
When they say you've died and are brain dead in a car accident, and your family's told you're dead, and you make the decision to not, quote, keep you alive, they then shuffle you out, you're still alive, and they keep you a lot of times for a week. They put an oxygen tent over you, know you don't need it, just so it's like a symbol of this person's dead. This has been going on for 50 years. And then when they get all the stuff lined up, then they do the surgery and get all the stuff. Well, then they try to go on 20 years ago. Well, why are we going to waste the 7 pounds of meat? And so they then convince poor women, oh, your baby's deformed or your baby's got a sickness. Oh, you know, oh, you're in labor. You're a homeless woman. The baby didn't make it. Sign the form, sweetheart. She signs the form. She's all drugged up. And they get that baby. And I mean, why not? It's all a commodity. We're all commodities now. I'm going to talk about what was trending number one on many of the charts on Twitter, but in the top 10 total, Alex Jones was right, and Alex Jones were trending yesterday and today at the top because there was a big document dump that Judicial Watch got about how they're keeping babies alive and then selling their organs while they're alive. And you ask, why do they do that? Well, because they've got these private auctions and systems. So if you can have a woman say, hey, you want to keep this baby at 9 months? She says no. They say, fine, we're not going to resuscitate. Resuscitate is a legal term in bioethics, meaning we're not going to say it's a human. They then, quote, keep the baby comfortable, but it's now a non-human, and then it's sent to a special ward while they then get all the buyers ready, get it prepared. Sometimes it takes a day. Sometimes it takes a week. I've been told they don't like to keep them around the ward more than a week or so because even the special nurses they've hired to work in these very secretive wards get a little freaked out. And we always use this graphic from 5 years ago, but it's way higher than that. They get the $300,000 or more from what's in a baby, a 7-pound baby. So, hell, a heart's like $100,000. So that's an inaccurate graph. Not mad the crew put it up there. Just wanted to let you know that. And you ask, well, why would Governor Northam, who used to run harvesting of babies when he was not in a KKK outfit, why would Governor Northam 4 years ago go on a show and say, well, we don't involve the authorities. We don't involve the police or the courts. It's between the mother and the doctor. She make a decision, 7-month-old, whether we're going to resuscitate or whether we're going to, you know, get rid of it. And if she make the decision not to resuscitate, we take the baby and we keep it comfortable. Well, I don't need to know and to defer from what he said what that means. I do know. And I've talked to the nurses, and I've confirmed it. When they say you've died and are brain dead in a car accident, and your family's told you're dead, and you make the decision to not, quote, keep you alive, they then shuffle you out, you're still alive, and they keep you a lot of times for a week. They put an oxygen tent over you, know you don't need it, just so it's like a symbol of this person's dead. This has been going on for 50 years. And then when they get all the stuff lined up, then they do the surgery and get all the stuff. Well, then they sort of go on 20 years ago. Well, why are we going to waste the 7 pounds of meat? And so they then convince poor women, oh, your baby's deformed or your baby's got a sickness. Oh, you know, oh, you're in labor. You're a homeless woman. The baby didn't make it. Sign the form, sweetheart. She signs the form. She's all drugged up. And they get that baby. And I mean, why not? It's all a commodity. We're all commodities now. You know, it's come out. Nobody cared that Fauci got a lot of these babies that were still alive. They would actually deliver them living. That's in the documents to the universities. And it turns out Fauci was over most of those. Of course he is. Everybody's really mad about beagles. And it's just one thing they did to beagles, hundreds of thousands of dollars per program, $300,000 a year, $500,000 there. It's all coming out. They would take beagles, puppies, of course. They like to really hurt young things, and they would implant in them African and Latin American boring maggot flies and all sorts of other diseases, and then watch them eaten by the maggots. And you ask, why would they do that in other burrowing flies? And they said, well, they also had flies that burrow into the brain. And Fauci, because Fauci in the program was trying to figure out how to give those to humans. That's admitted. The grants are for how to transmit things previously not transmitted to humans so that he can learn, God knows why, how to implant these things in your body. So just thought you might want to know. But he's a great man, right? Running the Wuhan lab and gain of function, all the rest of it. And, of course, he also used scalp from aborted babies to create human mice, and they would put the hair on the mice. That's just part of it. That they would also put keep the babies alive and put mice brains inside their brains and connect their brains together. And oh, here's a little secret, a little extra for you. If they make the baby 1% bovine or porcine or pinniped, they do all that. That's porcines, pigs, pinnipeds. You know those are. That's seals. Bovines, cow. When they make you just a small percentage an animal, you no longer have rights. That's why they're huge in the cloning chimera. Remember 2 months ago, Congress tried to pass a law saying stop all the cloning farms? And they said, oh, we're not. It fell by 9 votes, remember? Nine votes in the U.S. Senate. Yeah, Republicans voted with Democrats to keep the animal human clones going. So they don't have any rights. And by the way, I mean, I've talked to 3-star generals who were in the bases with the human animal clones. General Stubblebine saw that kind of stuff. He was the head of all special forces, head of all the secret programs. He wasn't in those programs, but he I know he saw some of that. He's dead now. Okay, so let's look at the little darling of the Rockefellers and the New World Order. Dr. Fauci funds organ trafficking from aborted babies, helping researchers graft baby scalps onto rodents. Now, that came out in May, seems like 100 years ago, from government documents that Judicial Watch and a bunch of other pro-life groups, life sites, been all over it, got out. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. They're not just funny experiments with aborted fetal scalps grafted onto rats. They're keeping babies alive. But, you know, no one seems to be really upset about that. That's just a human. Screw them. But they are upset about Fauci and the dogs. And I'm a dog lover myself. It's a big article on Infowars.com by Steve Watson. Fauci oversaw dangerous, torturous experiments on dogs. So why should I tell you about kidnapped babies in snuff films or kids spliced with animals so they have no rights and can be harvested or babies taken at birth and kept alive while they get auctions going for their body parts? Who cares about that? Screw humans. They're bad, right? Planned Parenthood told me so. CNN told me there's too many people. Okay. But the doggies. In addition to overseeing funding of gain-of-function coronavirus experiments in Wuhan and then lying about it, it has now emerged that Dr. Fauci was in charge of funding horrid experimental research on dogs, including purposely infecting animals with parasites known to be contagious to humans because they were studying how to give humans this. The report from the White Coat Waste Project draws on information gained by a Freedom Information Act request by Judicial Watch. 400,000 was pumped into the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease experiments to infect beagles with parasites from biting flies. The report outlines how the dogs endured months of pain, and once researchers had eaten them alive with maggots, when they were done with them, they were killed. The maggot lust. Yes, that's part of the maggoting is one of the religious rites. I've told you about maggoting. Guys, Google, find Alex Jones on maggoting years ago. I'm serious. They actually maggot troops in rituals at U.S. military bases at the VA. They put the flies in their nostrils, up in the sinus to lay eggs, and then they just like veterans having maggots eat their brains. I'm not kidding, but here it is right here, maggots eating dogs. So let me continue. The report outlines how dogs endured months of pain, and once researchers were done with them, they were killed. The NIA task order states that 28 beagles were to be allowed to develop infections for 3 months before being euthanized for blood collection. The records obtained during the FOI request show the dogs vocalized pain during experiments. You didn't like maggots, special screw worms eating you? Who had been eradicated in the U.S., but Fauci's bringing back screw worms. Torturing and killing dogs, most loving innocent creatures on earth. I disagree with Steve Watson. I think children are more loving, but I love dogs. With deadly parasites that are extremely dangerous to people. Can this guy get more evil? What's next? Funding for research on the temperature it's best to roast newborn babies? Well, we already sell their organs. Why not? Breaking down the report, Fox News host Ben Dominich noted that if Dr. Fauci thought Rand Paul was mad at him, wait until the animal activists see this.
Finishing our program will be a town hall by Project Veritas, and they have the main whistleblowers on stage, and we're going to put this up as an embedded video so you can see the whole 40-something minutes. We're only going to put up about the first 12 minutes of this, but go to my site, Charlotte Littlefield, and my site. We're co-broadcasters on this site. It's thesecrettruth.com. Come on into our site and you'll be able to see the embedded portion, or you can go to YouTube and find it there, Project Veritas Town Hall. But here we go next with about 12 minutes of the beginning of that, and that Zach Voorhees is featured in there also. He tells about them raiding him, you know, just a big travesty of justice with all these people out there, you know, with the size of arrest and attacks that they do on individual citizens.
That's the Whistleblowers Town Hall. You're going to be hearing from James O'Keefe. He's the founder. Yeah, you can clap. Go ahead, clap. Is the founder of Project Veritas, and is an investigative journalism organization, and he has with him a group of courageous whistleblowers you may recognize from big tech and big media.
Yes.
And he... please silence your cell phone, and then for questions, you would have gotten the form to ask a question. You can pass them to your left. It's your left onto the end of the aisle. They're going to be picking them up in a few minutes and then answering questions at the end. So make sure you get that written down and passed on to the end as soon as possible. Thank you. Enjoy.
Can't stand up here. Hello, everyone. I'm James O'Keefe, Project Veritas. These are all... Great to be here in South Dakota. This crew has been... traveling around a bit, and we have a new whistleblower with us today, David Johnson from Caswell. And Ivory Hecker. It was Ivory Hecker from Fox 26. So we are going around the country on kind of a tour here, recruiting other people inside societies, institutions with the tagline, be brave, do something. And we have CNN, Google, the Postal Service, CBS Detroit, Hasbro Toys, Pinterest, Fox 26, and there's going to be hundreds of these people across the country. It's going to be amazing. So, what we're going to do, we have about 40 minutes here. We're going to go around and let each of these brave souls say a few words, 3 to 5 minutes, about who they are, what they've done, and any other comment. And then we'll talk a little about what happened with David, because just this morning, as we're walking into the stage, Hasbro is attacking David and attacking Project Veritas in a kind of Orwellian way, saying that we edited things, and we don't edit anything out of context of Project Veritas. But they have nothing to say, so they attack us. He exposed racial comments in the company and accusing us of racism. So it's just like George Orwell, 1984, is what we have to deal with every day. But let me start with Carrie Porch, brave CNN insider, recorded CEO, president of CNN, Jeff Zucker, and many other things. You all know the CNN tapes that we released this year were just huge, led to the suspension of Project Veritas for quoting Charlie Chester at CNN, saying that CNN is a political operation designed to help Biden, and get Trump out, to quote the control room guy at CNN, saying fear sells at CNN, that we have fear, and we don't say these things out loud. So, Carrie Porch, go ahead. Thank you so much, Mark. All right, how are we doing in South Dakota? This is a beautiful state. Any of you guys that are local, we are just having an amazing time here. Went to Mount Rushmore last night as a team, and this is definitely God's country. This is amazing scenery. The pictures don't do it justice at all. I started working at CNN in 2017. Full disclosure, I went there as a registered Democrat and a leftist, and I campaigned for Bernie in the 2016 election. I know this is Freedom Fest. We usually don't care who you vote for. We just want the freedom, right? That's where we're at. So my very first job in there was Charlottesville when all that stuff went down. And I was there, and I saw it live, like the actual speech from Trump. And keep in mind, at the time, I was not a fan. But I saw the speech, the good people on both sides, but not the white supremacists and the neo-Nazis. I saw that. Then a few days later, I saw what my bosses cut the last 30 seconds out and just said the good people on both sides. That, to me, was the first antenna raising that there's something not quite right here. And that led to a basically year and a half, almost 2 year journey down the rabbit hole to like really kind of find out what the truth is left, right, or center. Then I found this man at CPAC in 2019 where I was actually working for CNN. I was covering it. And at that time, I was at the end of my ropes. I wanted to do something to protect the Republic and just the, you know, the spirit welled up inside me like I have to do something. And I came and found this man, had a discussion. We basically talked for about a month or so before I decided to record. Because think about it. He and I both had a lot to lose if neither one of us was on the level, right? So then something happened to work. I started recording for about 6 to 7 months, October 2019. We released the tapes. Got Jeff Zucker saying, hey, don't go after news. All we want is impeachment. Go after this, this, this. I don't care about the other news. That's not what news is supposed to be. That's not why I went to CNN. I wanted to give the public the news for you guys to make up your own decision. And that clearly was the case at CNN. Facts first, the most trusted name of news. Not quite. And we released the tapes. Apparently blew up really well. And then here we are trying to recruit the next class of, insiders. So it's going to double or triple this in the next couple of years or couple months, actually. Thank you so much. So, Kerry really was so brave because he kind of, I mean, every time that one of these guys comes out, there's a dozen more people within the institution like him. And we got the dial-in for the Jeff Zucker conference call and recorded it. It was amazing. So, and we're gonna do this, and then afterwards we'll do Q&A. So then you guys think of your questions. Next insider, Zach Voorhees, very brave man because he worked for Google and had some powerful information. One of the slides which we'll show, it said that they have algorithmic unfairness at Google. That means that even if the facts are factually accurate, we'll censor them because the truth can be unfair. And it's a theme we're seeing in all the tech up Facebook, Morgan Common, who couldn't be here today. They had vaccine hesitancy rankings. So even if it's factually accurate, we're going to censor it and we do not want the public to know. Zach, say a few words.
Yeah, so I worked at Google for 8.5 years. Fantastic job. I loved it so much. But in 2016, that all changed when the wrong president got democratically elected. And the senior executives at Google decided that they were going to put the toothpaste back into the tube of populism and nationalism. And for those of you who haven't seen the all-hands meeting that they had about a week after the election, Google said some really inappropriate things. And Breitbart leaked the video, but what most people skipped past, which was actually the most important part of this video, was a question by one of the Google employees to Sundar Pichai. And the question was, what was one of the most effective things that Google did during the 2016 election? And his answer was that they had used machine learning in order to censor the fake news. And I remember sitting at my really comfortable desk at YouTube, which Google owns, and thinking to myself, wait a minute, we're censoring fake news? Isn't the mission statement of Google to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful? How does that fit into a reality when we are deciding what's fake news and what's real news and then censoring it? And so this started a very long rabbit hole that I started to go down. And like Kerry here, I would consider myself a leftist for my entire life, like bordering socialist, more like a classical liberal, really. But as I started to untangle why Google was censoring fake news and the system that they were using to censor the fake news, there's also a personal story of my deconstruction as I realized that everything that the media was saying was kind of contrived and kind of a social construct. And once you really kind of get that and you start seeing it everywhere, you start realizing that, I'll just be honest, there's a foreign intelligence operation operating within the United States that's pumping our soft minds with propaganda. And And their secret weapon is that the people don't know that this is actually happening. And so we don't have to get guns. We don't have to, like, stage an insurrection. All we have to do is give people the truth. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to show everyone what I saw as a full-time employee. And what I saw was really eye-opening. And so that's why I came to Project Veritas. They were the best outfit to be able to deliver this story to you, the American public. And I really got to thank James O'Keefe for that. Like, the whole company is a reflection of his integrity. And, you know, thank you.
Can you say, just say a few words about that right after you were either terminated or blew the whistle, law enforcement came and did, if you're comfortable saying something to that effect, just the retaliation and how you overcame that.
Yeah, so I remember calling up James and saying, hey, Google's getting a little hot with me. They're, like, sending a really high-profile law firm after me to destroy my finances. And if I end up dead, then you could just take all 950 pages and leak it to the public. And then I went on Twitter and I posted pretty much the same thing. In fact, it's in my book right here, first chapter. You'll see the tweet. It's got a picture of a guy who's about to be killed by a dragon, but in the last movie he's like thrusting a dagger into his heart. And I say on this tweet, in the event of my untimely death, all records will become public domain. 30 minutes later, I've got police at my house. And I'm like, I'm not going to answer the door, right? Because they don't know that I'm there. And instead of going away and, like, just going back wherever, they decided to escalate. And they also, like, saw something in my house. And they're like, let's just say this is a bomb. So they escalated to a bomb threat. And that means that they call in, like, the FBI and the SWAT team. And they had, like, shut down the roads, start evacuating people and my neighbors.
Can't make this up.
Yeah. I realized that this was going on because I was like, why are the helicopters flying really low to my house? And there was like one, and then there was like two, and I'm like, okay, this is not a coincidence. I think they're here for me. And then my best friend actually like came over and saw all these police, and he was like, are you guys here for Zach Voorhees? And they're like, who are you? And I'm like, I'm the guy who can get him out. Totally blew my cover. And so, the standoff ended with me coming out. And they detained me. They asked me, like, whether I wanted to harm myself or whether I should be on drugs or whether, you know, whatever. And then at the end, they revealed that Google had done this by saying, why would Google call this wellness check on you? And I said, aha, I knew it. Yeah, it was Google the entire time. So, yeah,
thank you. And that's very – thank you for sharing that. And we have the pictures, if you don't believe it. I have pictures of law enforcement showing up to his house.
There is so much out there that's going on and gosh, so wicked and so devilish and evil. But anyway, I believe that those unruly passengers on those airlines have been affected by this vaccine. That's my feelings. But also, we have up on our site a report on Klaus Schwab and his background, his family background, which goes back before World War II. And they were consorting with the Nazi regime through a company there in Switzerland in helping further the German Nazi interest during World War II. So look at that. But otherwise, we want to thank each and every one of you. And about these hospitals, you need to be very careful about your doctor so that they can, in the right hospital, affect some of these alternative cures if that's what you wish. So be very careful about that. And I want to, God bless each and every one of you out there. And I just really fear for this, the outcome here of moving through this virus in this vaccine period. It's not good and it's very evil. We must resist and fight it. Thank you for listening. Good night.